Welcome back to Talking of Books. We've got a couple of quiz questions out there for the lucky winners to win copies of books as prizes. So the first question was, where does kryptonite come from? The second question was, in which state is Hollywood in the US? So text in your answers to 4001 and please put your name, and we will make the draw towards the end of the show. But we're now in the Book of the Week segment, and the book that we'll be discussing today is So You've Been Publicly Shamed by John Ronson. But just before we start that, and we are joined by a regular book reviewer, Prashiti. Welcome, Prashiti.
It's good afternoon, Yvette. Isabel.
It is. You're quite right. I just wanted to let our listeners know about a few of the other things that are going on at the Emirates Literature Foundation. The English Readers Majlis returns on October the 10th, and the theme will be journeys, and the location is Sofitel Dubai Jumeirah Beach. If you want to have more details about that, please log on to our website, elfdubai.org, and you will find all the details. Similarly, about the Festival Reading Group in Arabic, it's on October the 25th. And the book, this is, I'm just telling you the name in translation, it's Knights and Priests by Mundhir Kabbani. That will be held at the Dubai World Trade Center Club on the 33rd floor. And the English version of the Festival Reading Group takes place on October the 19th. That's an evening event, and the book that's being reviewed is A Boy Made of Blocks by Keith Stewart. It's being held at the World Trade Center Club, 33rd floor. All details of events that are taking place are happening at that are happening as part of the Emirates Literature Foundation are all on our website. And thank you, Gavin, for your suggestion of a book, The Unexpected Visitors by Oliver Sudden. I've never heard of it.
News to me as well.
Yes.
But I think.
But Gavin's a very regular listener, and I'm sure his suggestions are excellent. So thank you for that, Gavin. Now, Prashiti, could you tell us in a nutshell, us and our listeners, about the book So You've Been Publicly Shamed by John Ronson?
This book is published by a British journalist, John Ronson, about online shaming. And we didn't think that whatever we put on social media can affect us in a negative manner. And he's the one who addressed this issue in his book, So You Have Been Publicly Shamed. And the book is published in 2015. So it's a quite latest research he has done to make people aware about what you post on a social media. He's specifically concentrating on Twitter than any other media, because the story of 140 characters can change your life forever and ever.
Which is quite sort of horrific when you think about it, because he talks about the sort of the history of public shaming, and it was when they put people in the stocks, or you were, publicly whipped. I mean, talking going back. So he gives us the sort of history of public shaming, obviously before social media and the internet. And the thing that struck me was that being publicly shamed would have happened either by a sentence that was passed on you by a recognised authority, or by your story appearing in the newspaper. That would be the ways that you'd be publicly shamed that I can think of, John. Would you agree?
Yes, at one time. Certainly the days of being whipped, tarred and feathered and paraded around, put in the stocks or the pillory in the town square for everybody to laugh at you, and with a placard round your neck pointing out your sins, then there might have been some sort of recognised justice authority, kangaroo court it may well have been. But now we've got these thousands of self-appointed arbiters of morals and what's right and what isn't, and seem to delight in
passing judgment
and trying to whip up a frenzy about whatever trivia it is that, as I thought some of them described it, they are there to be to take offence,
yes,
publicly. This is what looking for things,
and
that
I think
will offend them. That Ronson tells of this awful woman who overheard two guys at a fairly high-tech conference exchanging, it was sort of schoolboy, semi-smutty jokes. I don't particularly, but they weren't saying it out loud. She's eavesdropping. They weren't directed to her.
And she turned around and photographed them.
And then she photographed and said, oh, that their discussion of what they were talking about offended her to such an extent. And the poor guy got fired. Mm. And now they are publicly pilloried by this awful woman. And it seemed that she had a record. That she had about 30 times that she had picked up on whatever she decided offended her in a context. Oh, you hear somebody on a bus or something say something as a passing remark. Oh, I'll take it, photograph, and I'll publicise this now.
Mm.
These poor guys, one in particular, had lost his job and had huge difficulty getting another job.
And he'd got three children, hadn't he?
Self-appointed guardian of supposedly feminist morals.
But what happened was, after she did that, and he obviously had no idea, it was one in particular that one of the two that lost his job, because he was the one that had made the remark. And so she posted it on social media. He lost his job because of what she said. But then he put an apology on social media and said that, you know, I apologise that if it was taken in the wrong way, it wasn't intended like that. And as a result of this, I have lost my job and I have a wife and children to support, and it's very difficult. So then social media turned against her. And it was this kind of thing, not who was right or wrong, but this rabble of people,
a mob,
who neither,
mobile
vulgus,
as the Latin Romans used to call it.
Yeah, neither
mob.
Rabble were there when it happened. And it's this sort of, this kangaroo, it's not even a kangaroo court. It's just, you know, millions of people just actually being empowered to destroy people's lives, because generally, this is what is happening. It is happening, and people need to be really aware of the dangers of social media. So, one, he starts off with this Justine Sacco, who is an American woman working for a PR company in New York. So you'd think someone working for a PR company would be slightly savvy about social media and its impact. But anyway, she had 180 followers. She tweeted something when she was in Heathrow between flights. She was going on to South Africa or somewhere in Africa.
Yes, and she was heading for Johannesburg. Or Cape Town, I think.
Yes, so she tweeted something, and she checked her phone before she got on the next flight, nothing. And then just before she left, she put another supposed joke that she thought was a joke and probably was intended as a joke.
Yes, it was, totally. She was making fun of herself.
Yes,
and it was taken as a racist insult.
Yes, and so by the time she landed in Cape Town, her best friend had sort of sent her a message, said, please contact me as soon as you can. There was this enormous storm that had come because it was read that it was a racist remark. It was written by someone who was white and in, you know, was one of the have-it-alls. They'd associated her name with someone who was incredibly rich. That was her father. In fact, her father sold carpets. So all these assumptions had been made, and her life was destroyed. She lost her job, and so on and so forth. And this because she put an ill-worded joke that was misconstrued. Yes.
And willfully misconstrued. And the poor woman ended up with this a complete firestorm around her.
And she wouldn't have thought about it because she just had 180 followers.
Exactly.
Who will think that it will become a turmoil in such a way that she'll become the number one Google search engine personality overnight?
Yeah. Mm.
Mm. I mean, it's just horrific.
Why are you not on Facebook, and why are you not on Twitter? I don't quite see the point to begin with. And I always make the joke, well, the kind of person I am, I should be an anti-social media. But clearly, that's my, used to be a little private joke, and I see that the entire thing would be better named anti-social media than social media. When you see the virulence that seems to infect the entire Twitter sphere and
and I know
the world of Facebook.
I know he talks a lot about people who you know, are adults and who have lost jobs and things like that. But what he doesn't really tap into, and for me is one of the most worrying aspects of social media, is what happens with teenagers and what, you know, there are all these instances of other teenagers in their social network posting photographs of some of them, and then we find teenagers absolutely can't go on.
Well,
you know,
devastated, actually, and we've had, as he cites, instances of suicide, on, and not just in social media. One of the horror from this young girl who was the victim of an assault.
Yes, cyberbullying. That cyberbullying is becoming now a major concern among the school. Parents and teachers.
It is,
and which is taking.
And without social media, it can't. You know, there's always been bullying. We're not saying there hasn't been bullying, but the cyberbullying is the worst kind of bullying, I think, that is impacting on students, you know, from the age of 12 upwards, maybe younger, but it is horrific. We're going to take a short break. When we come back in, John will introduce that segment, because we are hearing from John Ronson about this book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed. So You've Been Publicly Shamed. Do stay tuned.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye, 103.8. Now, back to the team. Book of the Week, what you should be reading.
And welcome back to Book of the Week and what you should be reading. I think this is certainly one you should be reading. And it's called So You've Been Publicly Shamed by John Ronson, and exposes, I think, the devastating power of social media to destroy lives, or if not to destroy them, that certainly can have a very, very negative impact. And the number of people out there who seem to do nothing else but seek out prospective candidates for shaming or vilification, even from the highest level, John Ronson himself became victim of a spam bot by university researchers, academics, who couldn't see anything wrong in stealing his identity and setting up a totally fictitious version of John Ronson. Prachiti, you're the lead reviewer. Tell our listeners more about it. We've got a clip of an interview with John Ronson that will be coming up in a few minutes. Prachiti, tell us more about that episode with the university people.
When I got this book, it's the first incidence which he quotes that some university researchers create an identity about him on social media, and they create a Twitter handle with the same name as John Ronson, and they start posting and creating his identity, which is not him, and they start putting him as he's going to various hotels and various restaurants and doing things which he usually is not doing. So he approaches them and asks them to take that down. But unfortunately, they deny to take it down. Then he approaches Twitter. They also deny to take that account down. So he has to, finally those academic researchers who created this account, they agree to meet him. So what he does is he records that entire interview and then he puts it on a social media saying that as their acceptance that they have stolen his identity. And then they close the account. Mm. So it's like you have to do a crime to rectify a crime.
And he actually closed his Twitter account and then came back to it because he's got a large following. And it is, you know, I love Twitter and it is addictive, John. It is a sort of addictive thing. I really enjoy reading because you can get sort of, you choose who you follow. So you can follow particular media, you can follow particular writers, and you get sort of, you get like bite-sized chunks of things, and then you can go and do, you know, so if you there's an article on Huffington Post you want to read, you can just read it, or The Guardian or whatever. So I enjoy it, but I think that there has to be some kind of control where these things spiral out of control and people are being hounded just by millions of people who really have no clue what's going on, and their lives are changed forever. You know, they'll never be okay again. It damages them permanently, because the problem is there is always a history with social media. You cannot wipe it out, even though Google have said you can. But let's listen to the writer himself, John Ronson. Let's just hear what he's got to say about "So You've Been Publicly Shamed."
You know, for like 30 years, I've been writing stories about power, I guess, and about, especially when power goes crazy. So, and that goes all the way back to my book, Them, you know, where I was talking about kind of secret cabals like the Bilderberg Group and, you know, their kind of power. And then in the Ministeriet Goats, it was like the power of the military, these kind of weird, crazy factions of the military. And then in the Psychopath Test, it was like, you know, Big Pharma and so on. And so with this book, what I noticed was that, you know, power had changed. And we were the ones with the power now. Mm. Like, suddenly everybody was scared of us on social media. And when I say us, I suppose I mean kind of social justice people like me. So it just felt like a completely appropriate, you know, next story for me to write, I suppose, because I follow where power goes. And I think the fact that we're not as fast at keeping up with the shifting sands of power is part of the problem. So with Justine Sacco, the tweet was, "Going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS, just kidding, I'm white." Yeah. So when people, and then she turned off her phone and fell asleep on the plane and was completely oblivious to the fact that while she slept, her life was torn apart. Mm-hmm. When people started getting her, it was all to do with punching up, right? It was all to do with, you know, here is this woman who is kind of flaunting privilege. Look at her, she works for a powerful media company. You know, we are punching up. We are getting people misusing their privilege. I mean, the fact that I think in Justine Sacco's case, none of that really was true is, for a moment, let's put that to one side. But then when, you know, she's plummeting to the ground, right? Because we're saying, you know, let's get this woman fired. And, you know, because we on social media said, let's get her fired, she got fired. Mm-hmm. So power instantly shifts. The people who like to see themselves as the silenced minority, because that's how a shaming works. It's like the silenced people punching up. Suddenly they were the ones with all the power. It's like, let's get Justine Sacco fired, she's fired. Let's get her reputation destroyed, her reputation's destroyed. She's now on the ground, completely powerless, and we're still kicking and kicking and kicking. I think it's a desire to be empathetic, good, kind, ethical people. We surround ourselves with people who feel the same way that we do. Because, you know, what is social media? It's kind of like a kind of mutual approval machine. You know, everybody like approves each other. And I love, look, there is nothing more, you know, I love them being approved and congratulated by people who follow me on Twitter. And it's why I joined Twitter. It's a powerful, positive feeling. But then what happens is that, you know, we fall in love with showing how kind and ethical we are. And so we start looking around for people who are misusing their privilege that we can take down. But then we fell so much in love with it that we started attacking people who could only be perceived as being misusing their privilege, you know, if you half close your eyes and massively degrade the definitions of privilege and misuse. People who didn't have a voice suddenly had a voice. Like, I always had a bit of a voice, right? I mean, because I'm a journalist and I'm you know, pretty well known and so on. So I always had a bit of a voice. But I suddenly found that people who had no voice at all, people from marginalised communities, suddenly had a voice and were using their voice in really measured and appropriate ways. So if a right-wing columnist wrote a homophobic or racist column, they could be got. And we suddenly realized, you know, we had more power. I say we because I would join in on those power lines and it felt like, you know, a leveling of the playing field. And I was certainly on the side of the shamers at that stage.
So there we have it, straight from the horse's mouth, from John Sacco himself.
John Ronson.
Sacco was
the victim.
Sacco, Justine Sacco. Sorry about that. I would like to just release the final quiz question. I'm going to read a little bit from 1984 because I think this sums up some of the horror of social media, which obviously did not exist when George Orwell wrote 1984. So it's taken from 1984. The horrible thing about the 2 minutes hate was not that one was obliged to act a part, but that it was impossible to avoid joining in. Within 30 seconds, any pretense was always unnecessary. A hideous ecstasy of fear and vindictiveness, a desire to kill, to torture, to smash faces in with a sledgehammer, seemed to flow through the whole group of people like an electric current, turning one even against one's will into a grimacing, screaming lunatic. And yet the rage that one felt was an abstract, undirected emotion, which could be switched from one object to the other like a flame of a blow lamp. And I think that actually sums up what seems to happen on Twitter, that it is a virus, an evil virus, that somehow or other people think they have the right and the freedom to destroy others. That, for me, is what John Ronson's book said. So the question is, to win a copy of this week's Book of the Week, So You've Been Publicly Shamed by John Ronson, when did Orwell publish 1984? We just need the year that he published 1984. Please text it in to 4001 and please put your name. So that's our final quiz question for today. What do you think, John? I just thought that bit so sums up.
Well, it's, as is so often the case, Orwell prescient in 1984, that so often I think that so much has happened, or that Orwell wrote about it, that when he wrote 1984, that seemed shocking and beyond imagining that society could become like that, that 1984 is long gone, and what we take for granted now, Orwell will say, wow, that worse than he'd beyond his imagination to put into 1984.
Mm. Yes, so, you know, and... social media doesn't feature, but the idea that
Edward Snowden's disclosures about the extent to which government or government agencies snoop on their own citizens would be unthinkable, and I think that is Orwellian 1984 defined. But have we taken a break?
No,
well, no, we should have done at 12:30. We've been getting carried away with John Ronson. But yes, we will take a break now, but stay with us and we'll be back. And we've still got half an hour or so left to talk about this rather, to my mind, scary Book of the Week.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye, 103.8. Now, back to the team. Book of the Week, what you should be reading.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. And we were just discussing off air another really interesting part of the book that John Ronson's written, So You've Been Publicly Shamed. And that is that... he goes to one of these specialist tech companies who help people regain their reputation, their good reputation, not by posting untruths, but by creating stories around the person who's been publicly shamed, so that the previous bad news stories go further and further down the Google search. And so they would have stories all around whether someone likes ice cream or whether someone has gone on holiday or someone likes to be in the mountains or things like that, and have these stories, and they would obviously get pickups on those stories. They understood the algorithm that Google uses so that those stories would be the ones that come to the top rather than the ones that did so much damage. And that, I thought, gosh, so if you really want to research someone, you need to go beyond page two to see were there any bad news stories.
If they've got an expert, or if they've had an expert rehabilitator in to...
Yes.
Even I will suggest that as a fun, even if you try putting your name in Google search engine and you will see what all comes up, you will be surprised that there will be data which you probably didn't directly provide to anybody. Like, I have done it for myself. That's the reason I can tell you, because I have written one book review for somebody else and that has been published on a totally unknown website which I have never heard about, which is like, if they can do so much of a data pooling, you have to be careful what you write, whether in a print media or online, because the world has coming closer in a really weird sense now.
Mm. It is very dangerous, yeah, very dangerous.
A small ad that I keep seeing in Private Eye, and now I am... having read this book, I see the significance of it. I've always wondered why. And it says, daring to Google yourself, get rid of bad search results, fast, fix fee, clean up. WWW online reputation repair.
Mm. So now you know.
Now I know, after reading John Ronson, that why it would be necessary that daring to Google yourself.
But when I read this book, like just in the case of Justin Sacco, which is a joke which has been turned out very badly, that she lost her job, it can be a good thing for them when the court gives a judgment in their favor, because still the judgment should come first so that people at least will know that she has been declared innocent and she has apologized, rather than her tweet and comments of people coming on the front page.
Yes, I think there were many instances that John Ronson gives the reader that show that people never intended what was then construed by the readers of Twitter or other social media. And it seems that people have nothing better to do. And what really, really upset me was that when people got their knives out, you know, in the case of Justin Sacco or other female shamed personalities, as it were, the things that they said about them, the things they were suggesting would happen to these people, females I'm talking about, it didn't seem to be the same thing for men. There was definitely a very vicious edge to the comments they were making if they wanted to hurt a female victim of the public shaming, as it were. And that was really uncomfortable reading, John.
Yeah, very much so. But on the other side, that we saw... I think what started with the good intentions of exposing people like Jonas Lerner, who had falsified... He was earning huge amounts of money from his books, his speaking engagements and all the rest of it. And meantime, he was a fraud.
Well, he'd made up things about that Bob Dylan had said.
Exactly.
And Bob Dylan hadn't said them. But do you know what, John? How many times does that go on? It's no big deal. I know you shouldn't do it. But particularly as a journalist...
His entire body of work was postulated on this. And it wasn't just, yes, the Bob Dylan reference was the one that tripped him up. But then once
the entire thing then started to unravel
on what a complete fraud he was and all the rest of it. Mm.
And this is so common amongst, say, 21st century students, this plagiarism issue, that, you know, they now with the internet, you know, it didn't, before the internet it would have been impossible, but now you can find... You can find your perfect essay on any single topic. You can change a few words and try and pass it off as your own. And you know, more and more, I think these kind of things are happening.
When I did my dissertation, when we were talking about all this plagiarism and all, my professor and the editor of my dissertation, she's told that, you know, there are free softwares available which can find out if you have manipulated one or two words here and there, and that can pull out the actual work. But here when he's talking about all these things, I think that, you know, people are turning into a judiciary system themselves rather than having faith in the judiciary system. Mm. Like in the case where Lehrer. So when he did that, it's because John Ronson went and dig out everything, it could come to the light, because John Ronson actually knew what Bob Dylan said. Mm. It hadn't been the truth.
It was Ronson who spoke. Well, it was Moynihan.
It was Michael Moynihan who discovered.
And he raised an eyebrow, as he was pretty familiar with Dylan's comments. He's a bit of a Dylan freak, and said, "Well, I don't recall seeing this before." And dug further and said, "Hey, all this attributing and sourcing." Well, was a total fraud by Lehrer. And here was a bloke who was coining it hand over fist from the sort of pop psychology stuff that he was turning out.
But how many people really go and before they retweet something, if you have a doubt, like yesterday only I saw a tweet about, it's not a tweet, it's a post on a Facebook saying that Brad Pitt died. And when I Googled about it, because I couldn't see it on any trustworthy news media, I Googled about it and the first thing came up is this is a hoax. So people are still tweeting, people are expressing their condolences when the person is very much alive.
That's terrible.
And, well, who would initiate that? And I constantly get emails that like the old days of, you know, when it used to be faxes.
Yes.
And I take a look at it as well. I'm very, very sceptical to begin with. Check it out. And there's the website Snopes, S-N-O-P-E-S, that is dedicated to just exactly that, what is true and what isn't. And so many of these stories, especially politicians and right-wing American propaganda, the Tea Party people, have no compunction whatsoever on pumping out all those ridiculous stories.
So I think the lessons to be learned from John Ronson's very timely book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed, are, first of all, if you are going on to social media, take the time to think about what you put, because it could come back and bite you. And secondly, if you see something that has turned into a media frenzy, and you really don't know much about it, don't join that frenzy. Don't join that frenzy, because actually it could all be completely untrue or biased, someone with an ulterior motive. So I think, you know, we do need to treat social media with caution. And I think particularly young people, because teenagers don't have the life experience and they're the ones that I see being ultimately very much harmed by what is going on.
But I have another concern. How many teenagers are on the social media who are not supposed to be there because of the age barrier? They just enter the social media by giving a wrong date of birth. And there are so many people on the Facebook you will see, on Twitter you will see, those who say that, okay, we are above the certain legal age to be on the social media.
But they're
that
not.
Is another concern.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's because, it. But who's... So you say you're over whatever the age is.
Nobody's asking you to show the age proof.
But that goes back to teenagers, that we're going back a long way here, who would lie about their ages to get into an 18 film, you know, an X film and things like that. Join the army in the First World War, where there were 15-year-olds signing up, lying and saying they were 18 because they wanted to go and fight. Can you imagine? That wouldn't happen today.
That used to be one of my biggest teenage concerns, that by the time I'm old enough to get in legally, will X films still be showing?
Yes, yeah. I have never, John, been to an X film, because a bit like Tanya Landman, the author we were speaking to earlier, I get terrified of anything that is horror or things like that. I've got a very overworked imagination, and I don't think it does. I'm going to ask a quiz question. This is the final chance you've got. Please send in the year that George Orwell published 1984. And the clue really is in the title, more or less. When did George Orwell publish 1984? Text in 4001 and please put your name. And we'll be announcing the three winners of the competitions today in the next 10 minutes or so. Well, we've really, I think, found John Ronson's book incredible.
I agree absolutely, and this is perfectly the correct time to read this book when social media is going frenzy everywhere.
Yes, yeah. Now we're going to take a short break. This is our final break in Talking of Books today. Do stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this. And I want to let you know what we're going to be reviewing next week, because next week's a special show. Sadly, John, you're not going to be with us next week.
No, I would be, Isabel, but I'll be back in 2 weeks, I think. Maybe.
Okay.
I can't remember when.
So you'll be back for when we have the winner. But
yes,
we next week's all focused on the Booker shortlist. We'll tell you the titles after this short break.
From Agatha Christie to Jeffrey Archer, we've got it covered. Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
And welcome back to Talking of Books. In the final segment of today's programme, in the final segment of our Book of the Week, and the Book of the Week, a book about shaming, being shamed in social media by John Ronson. It's, well, one of the plus points that I found in the thing, that he exposed that Stanford prison experiment that is thrown up so often as showing how people will revert or will become inhumane. When that students were asked to play the part of prison officers and one bunch of students were the prisoners.
But he gave a completely different
example
of it.
That has been cited time and time again, of how those students who are the prison officers became, you know, with their brief authority, very quickly became Gestapo type and worse and they're only role-playing.
But this is what I've never read that before. But apparently, John Ronson interviewed one of the key guards, as it were, the prison guards, who said, "But we were acting the part. That's what we were told to do." And
exactly.
And they were not suddenly had become
frenzied, vicious, all their inherent latent bullying streak, or sadistic streak came out because they suddenly had the chance to play prison guard. Right, we had to play the prison guards. And the other guys playing the prisoners said, "Okay, yes, I'll cower and help and moan and don't beat me, don't beat me." So, well, and, we're supposed to be acting. That's what we're doing.
Yes.
And they have been told to do that. I mean, when he goes and further expose that, he's been come to the truth that they have been told that you will be act like a dictatorian kind of a thing, and you have the authority, so show that. So it was not like it automatically came out.
No,
it was kind
but
of a
that's
control.
How it's always been presented. Until I read John Ronson's thing, I believed it was actually, this was a site.
And it's cited time and time again.
Yes, yeah.
So likewise, one of our regular, well, one time, Malcolm Gladwell, we have featured often on Talking of Books, and another very, very well-known thing, and I think Gladwell brought it to public notice to begin with, that the broken window policing policy in New York had led to
lesser crime.
A very, very marked drop in crime. It took place 10 years earlier, and the broken window, I think it was Rudolph Giuliani was then the mayor of New York that got, and Malcolm Gladwell was responsible for bringing this to public attention. It's complete nonsense.
Yeah. So they have these sort of so-called theories, but then they're not theories. I just want to let people know next week, October the 8th, Talking of Books, it is our special Booker Shortlist show. And the Booker Shortlist is as follows. The Sellout by Paul Beattie, Hot Milk by Deborah Levy, His Bloody Project by Graham McCree Burnett, Eileen by Otessa Muster, All That Man Is by David Slassie, and Do Not Say We Have Nothing by Madeline Thien. So a complete unknown, apart from Deborah Levy. Complete unknown list, John.
Indeed. But the Scottish candidate, McCree Burnett, he is selling, I was reading, in fact,
well,
I think we mentioned it last week.
His publisher is a two-man band, a two-woman band, and they are inundated. It has sold beyond their wildest dreams. And I heard an interview with him. He's absolutely brilliant. But there were two that I read on the long list. One was the North, something North. I can't remember what it was. You would have absolutely, by Ian Maguire, the North Water, the North Water.
Oh, this was long list.
Oh, that I have read most of the shortlist now. It was far superior to anything that's on the shortlist. An absolutely gripping tale set in the last century before 19th century, on whaling ships.
The quick clip I saw of it, that that would have appealed strongly.
And the other one on the shortlist was A Job Like Any Other by Virginia Reeves. Again, I hadn't heard of either of these writers, but they were wonderful books that I so enjoyed reading. Completely different.
Well, that one I've got coming up next for reading. It didn't make it. So it said Chrissy was, I think, struggling to find. Had even the shortlist been invented, been decided? So it was just, well, let's just spray and pray and dish out
what we have,
and if they reach the shortlist, perhaps we'll have covered them.
I had predicted my six of the shortlist from the long list, and not a single one got on it except Hot Milk, and I have to say I really dislike that.
Well, we've liked Andrea Levy. We've had her more than once.
I just don't like this book.
You don't like this one.
It's not enjoyable. I'm sorry, but I do want enjoyment from a book. It can be heartrending. It can be visceral. It can be bloody. I don't mind, but it's got to be enjoyable. Now, I've got great hopes for the Bloody Project, his Bloody Project, by, because it's been selling so well. So I've downloaded that, and I should be reading that one as well. But that's what's happening next week. You've got to announce today's results.
Yes, we have. Esther's pressed the magic button, and we now have winners. So all of you sitting out there anxiously hanging on to our every word, did I win, did it not? You're about to either celebrate or be put out of your misery. Question one, where would you find kryptonite? Thought that one was a bit of a penalty kick. Krypton, yes. Of course, although yes. Quite a few listeners thought otherwise. But the coming out of the magic electronic hat was Fatima. So, Fatima, you will be winning, I think, Litfest, a book, signed copy of a Litfest book.
And someone from the festival will get in touch with you, and we'll try and match your reading taste to the books we have on our shelves.
And the which American state is Hollywood in? So, Isabel, you wouldn't have been winning this one had you been left to your own devices.
No. California. But only thanks to Google.
Mm-hmm. So, not hotel.
No.
California, indeed. And the winner there is Gerda. So Gerda will be also be...
Gerda will be getting...
Litfest author?
No, Gerda will be getting a copy of the Blobs.
Oh,
the Attack of the Blobs,
course,
by Tanya Landman.
Of course, so Tanya Landman's book, the Attack of the Blobs. And of course, when did it all publish? 1984. It wasn't 1849 is correct. He wrote it in 1948, hence reversing 48 becoming 84 for
but
the title.
But it was actually
published a year later.
8th of June 1949, and he died, sadly, 6 months later. If you read The Tragic End of George Orwell, he could not stop writing this book, so he forwent having any treatment for TB because of that, and he couldn't find, he was on Dura, there was no one who could type it out, everything was handwritten, no one could read his writing, he had to lie in bed propped up with the old typewriter and type out 7 hours a day whilst he was suffering from terminal tuberculosis because it was his life's work. And interestingly, had he survived longer and become a chat host show or things like that, I can't ever imagine being that, but he would have seen politics develop, and I wonder how different we would have viewed 1984 if that had happened, because we were not able to ask him really what he meant. There were a couple of interviews just when it was published before he died where he gave an opinion of what he meant by it, and but then it died with him. So,
well, our winner today on that, as time is almost upon us, is Jason. So Jason will be getting a copy of our Book of the Week, the So You've Been Publicly Shamed by John Ronson. So that wraps us up today. Thanks to our guests earlier, Brian David, our book champion, our young reviewer, Sana, and Mustafa, of course, our lead reviewer today on the Book of the Week, Prachiti, Esther. Great job having you back as our producer, and from Isabel and me, thank you for joining us, and we'll be back same time next week with more Talking of Books.